that nobody in Canada owns the land. And they said, that's right. And you went, okay, then. And you just changed the conversation.
I think that land back similarly provoked a knee-jerk reactionary response within me, more than I probably voiced, which is a similar, like, it's actually probably like a series, like the first thing is protective and defensive. You can't have the land back. It's my land. I don't even care how I got it. You know, like I'm invested in this system, you know, like I got in just before the real estate like went nuts. Like I was like the last working journalist who could buy a house in Toronto. Like, that's it. You know, I'm not giving it back. It was very necessary for me to hear, yeah, calm the down. And making a joke out of, like, we're not coming and measuring the drapes. No one is, I forgot how you put it, Karen, but you were funny. No one is coming for the deed to your house. And in fact, some of the worst things that Canada did to Indigenous people were by the liberals of the time who thought that, like, all right, we'll make this right. And each one of those efforts, besides the fact that they were done poorly and done dishonestly and ended up doing all kinds of harm, really what they were trying to do was buttress the status quo and make it okay what was taken and what was done. If we give this little bit back, or if we give these rights, or if this is done, can we just continue to pillage? And the power dynamics that are baked into that just repeat the cycle and set up the next generation of atrocities, you know? So how the hell do you get out from that? And I think my understanding of the concept is that you actually have to go back to the beginning.
You know, and I think this is like a really interesting thing, Jesse, because this is where, like, amongst our disagreements, like, we really have one. I do think that journalism is about changing the hearts and minds of the people. And based on what you just said, I think I win.
I want to be really clear here. I don't think that journalism doesn't change the hearts and minds of people. What's the point of it? If you end up thinking and feeling exactly as you did at the beginning, what's the point? I just have a problem with journalism that sets out to do that. I think that you get into trouble when you try to change somebody's heart.
Jesse, I just wanted to back you up a bit. When you were talking about land back, you were talking about Canada Land and giving space to Karen and I to create Canada Land back and not being involved, like, you know, just giving us the space. And I think that's all part of land back as well, is people making space, giving space over for us to tell our stories. And you also said that maybe it's not up to Indigenous people to do all of this heavy work all the time. But we're the ones who started off telling our stories in the media and pushing mainstream and non-Indigenous media for space to tell these stories. And I still think it's up to us as Indigenous people to tell the stories, because that's where the truth comes from, right? And by you giving us space to make Canada Land back on Canada Land, that's part of the reconciliation step. And it's, you know, a microcosm of the entire land back movement.
This is our flagship show. This is our biggest audience. And I feel like too often the way that this gets handled in Canadian media is, here's the Indigenous corner. See, we've created a little corner. And you can tell stories over here in the corner. And it gets branded in a way that, like, the main audience isn't going to check it out anyhow. So I didn't want to do that. Thank you both for trusting me to do this with us, for us. Because that I think that did take some trust.
That's it. We're out of here. Thanks, everyone, for listening this season. And despite what Jesse said, the revolution will be podcast. This season of Canada Land Back was hosted and produced by Karen Pugliese, that's me, and produced by Kim Wheeler. Take us out, Farewell Davidson. Talking to me, oh, can't you see?
Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
Luke LeBrun, editor of Press Progress, Real Life Ottawan, and proud member of UFCW Canada Local 1006A. Welcome to Shortcuts.
Great to be with you, Jonathan.
Today on the show, the Independent MP and the Honey Trap. Oh, bother. I'm Jonathan Goldsby, and this is Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news.
A Toronto MP who was dropped by the Liberal Party days before the last federal election is speaking out tonight.
Kevin Wong claims he was the victim of foreign interference, a sexual assault allegation, part of a setup to bring him down.
He says that he's been informed that there was some degree of Chinese meddling in his particular riding in that particular election cycle.
Madam Speaker, the issue of foreign interference touches all Canadians and Canada. And over the last year, I have also closely examined circumstances and events involving my circumstances and situation in Spadina, Fort York. I have reached a conclusion that is certainly within the realm of possibility that I may have been subjected to Chinese interference in 2021, one that destroyed my name and worked to prevent my election in 2021.
A little over a week ago, the Globe and Mail got a hold of yet another report from CSIS, Canada's spy agency, warning of Chinese meddling in Canada's politics. This one was dated just ahead of the 2021 federal election and alleged that China's own security service had taken specific actions to target the Canadian MPs who'd spearheaded a motion that had decried China's treatment of Uyghurs and other Turkic Muslims as a genocide. In particular, it said a Chinese agent had sought information about an MP's family members who they believed might be in China in order to somehow put pressure on them. The Globe source elaborated on the report, saying the MP in question was Conservative Michael Chong, who'd sponsored the Uyghur motion, and that at least one person who'd been involved in the operation was Zhao Wei, a staffer in China's Toronto consulate. Chong does have family in Hong Kong, but out of an abundance of caution and knowing that China was miffed at him, he hadn't been in touch. So as such, the first he'd heard about any of this was when the Globe reached out, which is never an ideal way to learn anything. I mean, you don't get a cold call from Bob Fife saying, hey, I learned something awesome that you're going to want to hear. So on Monday, a week later, after the usual sort of back and forth between the opposition and the government about who knew what when and why weren't people told sooner, Canada expelled the Chinese diplomat, officially declaring Zhou a persona non grata, a term the government only really gets to bust out about once or twice a decade. China, in turn, has expelled the Canadian diplomat and huffily threatened other further measures that are still unspecified as of this recording. But we're not going to talk about that, not directly anyway. Instead, we're going to zoom in on a story that sprouted from this context in that intervening week and consider the degree to which a conspiracy theory spouted by an elected official ought or ought not to be considered newsworthy. Another MP claims he is victim of Chinese meddling, the National Post pronounced on its front page last Thursday. The MP in question there is Independent MP Kevin Wong, who's my MP. He represents the downtown Toronto riding of Spadina, Fort York. Luke, would you care to explain why he's an Independent MP?
Well, I guess going back to the federal election in 2021, Kevin Wong, I guess, you know, several days before the election, story came out in the Toronto Star, basically detailing how he had been the subject of sexual assault charges, which were previously dropped, but he did not disclose that apparently to the Liberal Party. And so, you know, obviously this came out right before the election.
Basically, yeah. So the Liberals dropped him as a candidate just a couple days before the election. The story came out on Thursday the 16th in the Toronto Star. The party told him to pause his campaign because they hadn't heard about this sexual assault charge that had been dropped. You know, because it had been dropped, it sort of still lives in this weird limbo space of he's never been convicted and has never been acquitted. So they dropped him as a candidate on the Saturday, and the election was the Monday, but he still narrowly beat the NDP candidate, Norton Pasquale, by a little over a couple thousand votes or 4.4 percentage points. What he's now alleging is that all of that that unfolded in the days before the election, and potentially even going back to the original alleged incident, allegedly criminal incident, was that it was all part of a Chinese-connected honeypot or honey trap sting to entrap him and to ensure that he wouldn't be elected, and I guess to elect the NDP's Norton Pasquale instead. But you have to get 800 words into the Post story, about halfway down, before you get to the statement that while Wong has no proof he was the target of what he calls a honey trap, he maintains the pieces add up. And by that point in the story, they've already quoted two experts, both of whom speaking on Chinese tactics generally, not these allegations in particular. So, Luke, given that he's alleging a plot against him with no proof, would you say it's fair to call this a conspiracy theory?
I don't know if I would call it a conspiracy theory. I mean, I guess there's two initial things that sort of stand out to me about this. I mean, first of all, is that Kevin Wong kind of did the rounds and did multiple media appearances to talk about this. And there was, you know, I reviewed some of these, and there's kind of a staggering lack of meaningful critical engagement with the sequence of events that he's laying out, which seemed like a pretty obvious place to maybe ask questions. I mean, the other part of it, too, I mean, let's just talk about the sequence of events. You know, like, according to his own story, you know, he's alleging a Chinese spy set up this elaborate scheme to entrap him, you know, years before he ever ran for office. He says that he basically met this person on a dating app in November 2018. They dated for months until, you know, the incident happened in April 2019, and police subsequently charged him with sexual assault. Charges were then dropped in November 2019. Flash forward 2 years to 2021, at which point Kim Wong runs for office. And then, you know, what is he alleging? Is he saying that China decided to release the details of this sexual assault charge right at that exact moment? You know, it's not entirely clear what exactly he's alleging. I mean, you know, if you actually watch the interviews, it's kind of funny. He repeatedly says, you know, this is the MO of a Chinese honey trap. He uses that exact talking point in several interviews, but he's always very vague about what he's actually, you know, implying or what he's actually insinuating happened.
Yeah, particularly on Moore in the Morning, which is a morning show on Toronto's News Talk 1010. I think he'd been a longtime panelist on there, but there was about a 7-8 minute interview. And, you know, John Moore, the host, is gentle enough, but he does keep pushing again and again and again to ask, like, what is it that you're alleging? Basically, are you alleging that this woman is a spy?
Okay, now you've used the phrase honeypot twice. Normally, that is where they send in a person, depends on who you're sexually attracted to, I guess, who sort of poses as a romantic interest, and then you end up entangled. Are you saying that's what happened?
Well, it's something that's well documented, right, in terms of the Chinese MO. It's happened in the U.S.
Right. But, I mean, I'm asking you if it happened to you. I mean, you would be the firsthand witness to this.
Yeah, I think if you took a step back and you looked at what happened to me, it just doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense.
You said he just keeps reverting to the same handful of points. Like, well, the pattern fits, or things to that effect.
You know, like what exactly is the strategy that he's alleging China's spy agency is engaging in here? You know, is he saying that they are going out and creating, you know, dating profiles? Like, are they creating plenty of fish profiles and just, you know, randomly trying to date people and, you know, get access to people that way in the event that maybe 2 or 3 years in the future they might possibly run for public office? It's just kind of a...
Given that he's an elected official, is the allegation itself newsworthy? Like, he is an elected official saying that he believes that China was out to get him. Is that news in and of itself?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's clearly in the public interest if an official, elected official is claiming that they were abducted by aliens, or if they were, you know, claim that they found an interdimensional portal. Like, if someone said something that was, you know, pretty outlandish, I mean, it would definitely be news that they said it. My main initial impression is just that there's no critical engagement with it. It just seems like they're kind of giving Wong a platform to just sort of lay out his claims, and there's not really any pushback. But as you mentioned, you know, you'll find like two-thirds of the way down some of these stories, just, you know, Kevin Wong provided absolutely no evidence to support any of his claims. And it's just sort of left that way in a very subtle, understated way, you know, kind of buried further down the story. And it, I feel like that's kind of a problem. Like, what is it about our media culture that, you know, people feel a reluctance to really critically engage with a politician making these kinds of, you know, allegations that clearly have holes in it, or, you know, seem a little dubious? I mean, there's reasons to doubt, you know, doubt Kevin Wong's story. There are reasons to question his credibility, I would say. So, you know, like, it kind of makes me wonder, like, what is, you know, what is it about our media culture that kind of prevents us to really scrutinize something like this?
I mean, one reason it could be the simply the credulity around claims relating to China. Goodness knows some outlets have been better or worse than others on this, but I do think it's notable that neither The Star, which broke the original story, nor The Globe, which has probably done the best reporting on the Chinese interference allegations, have picked up on this, have chosen to pick up on this. It's The Sun, The Post, not even CBC, CTV. I mean, people are more likely to believe things that fit in with their presuppositions, and this is a great story of this guy who was, you know, supposedly thrown under the bus by the liberals as part of this alleged Chinese plot. I mean, one of the things that sort of has, in some respects, tried to lend it credibility is that he met with CSIS about this. And this is one of those things where you look at the different articles and you see how this sort of gets a bit, not necessarily twisted, but how it's framed slightly differently. So in the initial Post articles, Wong says he met with CSIS in March to discuss his concerns. So that means, like, he met with them and said, like, hey, I think this happened to me. The Sun article, it was phrased as, Wong said he participated in a two-hour briefing session with Canadian Security Intelligence Service agents this year. Now, a briefing could certainly imply that they were talking to him about this. CTV just had it as, Wong said he had a two-hour meeting with CSIS, which once again, a person would probably take to mean CSIS was the one telling him about it. On News Talk, John Moore said, I understand you've had a briefing from CSIS. He said, I met with CSIS for 2 hours and our exchange was very insightful. And obviously I can't convey the content because of the ongoing conversations. It certainly seems to leave ambiguous or obscure exactly which direction the information was traveling.
I'm really glad you picked up on the response that Wong gave in the John Moore interview, because I noticed that too. So Moore starts by saying, you know, I understand you had a briefing with CSIS, and you can actually see Wong kind of, something goes on in his head and he kind of recharacterizes it as a meeting. And, you know, it's like, what, like, is he suggesting this wasn't a briefing? You know, like, and then in another interview, he says that it was CSIS asking him questions and he was giving them information. So that's not a briefing. If he's the one, like, who initiated this, whatever you want to call it, with CSIS? That's my question.
What he said in the House of Commons was that I have had a substantial meeting with CSIS that was over 2 hours to discuss my thoughts and concerns. That certainly suggests that he went to them as, like, maybe they don't have a box to put in feedback, or maybe they have an open door policy. I guess they should have an open door policy for MPs, but he approached them and they sort of heard him out for a couple hours. And I'd be very curious how that discussion went. To be like, why do you believe this? Well, it makes sense. Like, well, I don't know. Well, it doesn't make sense. But yeah. I'm like, okay. Like, it's clearly of comfort to him that this would make sense in that respect. Like, how did the sequence of events befall him that led to him being cast out of the party 2 days before an election? I'm glad, I guess, it helped him make sense of it, but I don't think it necessarily helps anyone else make sense of it. I mean, two of the original Star reporters who broke the story have weighed in on Twitter. Evie Kwong, who was at The Star's Now Advice, said, what happened is that you did not disclose your sexual assault charge that the Liberal Party didn't vet or know about until a victim came forward to us. We then accessed court records and found you and wrote a story. Alicia Hasham, who's The Star's, she was a longtime court supporter, she's now at City Hall, tweeted, we'll just add to this, just add to Evie's comment, because I helped Evie get the court docs here and reviewed them myself. There is nothing about this case that seems any different from an allegation of sexual assault in the context of a date. The alleged incident took place before he ran for MP. One other thing I find actually really telling about the original Post story is that the cut line, so the caption of the lead photo, reads, Independent MP Kevin Wong stood on a Fort York in his office in Ottawa, Ontario, on Thursday, March 23rd, 2023. Photo by Brian Passafume. Now, Passafume is the reporter who wrote the story, and I couldn't find anything that he or The Post had published on Wong between when that photo was taken on March 23rd and this story last week. So to me, that strongly suggests that The Post did this interview with Wong about a month and a half ago, but that, for whatever reason, they originally weren't terribly anxious to publish it. March 23rd was the day after MP Han Dong resigned for the Liberal caucus over a questionably sourced Global News report suggesting that he'd essentially committed treason. He's now suing them. And it may be that that had prompted Fong to go to the media with his own theory that the Post was hesitant to run it until the Globe broke the news about Michael Chong. I don't know. Do you think is that a conspiracy theory in and of itself? Am I reading too much into one date? Is that a conspiracy theory in and of itself?
I mean, we would probably need a couple of other data points to cross-reference that, I suppose. It is an interesting observation. I hadn't noticed that before. Another interesting thing in the National Post article, it mentions kind of like towards the end, it just sort of mentions this in passing without really substantiating it at all. It mentions an Axios story about congressman in the United States named Eric Swalwell, who, you know, apparently this is a real thing where, you know, there was a Chinese spy who was kind of going around political circles and befriending young politicians early in their careers, and even had a number of affairs with some Midwestern mayors, according to the story. And it kind of tries to equate it, but like it doesn't really provide anything other than just like, oh, this thing happened once a few years ago, and you know, maybe it's just like that. And then it just kind of leaves it like that, just in passing, which is kind of a strange, you know, just kind of a strange analogy you just drop randomly in a story like this. But, you know, I dug a little bit deeper into that Axios story. And I mean, what they're describing in that original story is someone who was actually going to political events and going to campaign events and going to political conferences and befriending people. It wasn't necessarily, I mean, there were some claims of affairs happening, but it wasn't really a honey trap thing. It was just someone who was going around to different political events and, you know, making connections with people. And that to me seems like a pretty, you know, it doesn't seem like that far-fetched of a thing that a foreign government might, you know, invest some time and energy into doing. But to equate that with what Kevin Wong is saying, you know, where, you know, he's basically saying someone created a dating profile and just randomly found him on the internet and then with the hope that maybe 3 years later he runs for office, it just seems like a very different situation.
Or alternatively, that someone put her up to go into the Star just a few days before the election at the worst possible time for him. I mean, the explanation for that, or what the Star said in its original story, was that basically this woman had been out of the country for a while, or been out of Toronto at least, came back to Toronto, saw his faces on election signs, and was like, holy crap, this is the guy who, you know, in her view, sexually assaulted her. I guess that is a coincidence of timing, but I mean, his whole election was a kind of a coincidence of timing. And like, as you well know, just from being general media consumer and certainly Press Progress, during elections, all kinds of stories are broken about all kinds of things that candidates have done and have said in the past all the time, right up to election day. And with George Santos, like famously after election day, right? Like the other thing with Vaughn is like his whole process was pretty whirlwind, right? Adam Vaughn, who was the incumbent in the riding, the Liberal MP, said he wouldn't seek re-election. He announced that on Sunday, August 8th, 2021. By Friday, Vong had been acclaimed as the new candidate. The election was called 2 days later on the Sunday. And then the news about the civil suit broke on 2 weeks later on September 1st. And then the criminal charge, like September 16th, a few days before election day. So, like, it's not surprising that someone who was not previously in the public eye to any extent, to a significant extent beyond being, you know, a distant runner-up for a Toronto City Council seat, would not have been vetted by the media, although it is kind of surprising that the Liberals hadn't actually done a criminal background check on him.
It's funny, you know, I think that anyone who tries to guess where a story comes from in the middle of an election is like 99% of the time going to be wrong. The reality is that information is coming from all sorts of different places. Often it's just random people who have invested their time into digging into things, or it's original investigative reporting by the news outlets themselves. But for some reason, you know, I mean, I guess there is a political interest on the parts of these parties to allege that there is this, you know, top-down elaborate conspiracy where, you know, the leaders of the parties are kind of concocting these scandals in back rooms. And often, you know, the reality is much more banal than they would have you believe.
How would you have reported this? What would a responsible way to have reported an allegation like this be?
I mean, he's basically attempting to discredit a sexual assault allegation, which we have no reason to believe is not credible. He's attempting to discredit by claiming that this is somehow tied in with a, you know, Chinese spy operation or whatever. and providing absolutely no evidence for that. I mean, one thing definitely is I would probably seek to center the person who is making these allegations, who is now being kind of smeared without any way to respond.
I guess it's possible the Post took so long on the story because they were trying to get a hold of the court docs, because maybe those would have, like, names of sexual assault complainants are generally under a publication ban, but they may or may not have been redacted from the court documents. I guess they could have been trying to get a hold of that. 6 weeks would be quite a long time for that. But yeah, no, I mean, presumably the Star is the only one who knows who this person is, unless the name is contained in the court documents. I mean, it's disappointing, but not surprising that her voice has not been present of late. So, Luke, as you probably know, on this show, we like to duly note things. Today, I would like to note duly a hearing by the House of Commons Heritage Committee that took place on Monday with the title Tech Giants, Current and Ongoing Use of Intimidation and Subversion Tactics to Evade Regulation in Canada and Across the World. That is an uncommonly aggressive name for a meeting title. And in fact, it was so uncommonly aggressive that the representative from Facebook who was supposed to show up, Nick Clegg, who was their global head of basically of government relations. He's a former head of the Liberal Democratic Party in the UK. He may even be a Sir Nick Clegg. I'm not actually sure. That wouldn't surprise me. He decided he just didn't want to show up. And the explanation they gave that was given, Facebook posted a statement to this effect, and this was read at committee, was that they had changed the hearing to something basically so aggressive. He said the hearing that he was invited to was called The Response of Companies in the Information Technology Sector to Bill C-18. C-18 is the Online News Act, the thing that would, once passed, would force Google and Facebook, at least theoretically, to pay news organizations for links. The hearing was kind of about that, but really they were trying to grill Facebook on their threat to basically shut out news links in Canada, shut down news in Canada, should this bill go through. So Facebook claimed to be caught off guard by this change in the heading. They did change the title of the meeting, but like the new meeting title was taken from the exact text of the original motion that called the meeting in the first place. It shouldn't have caught them off guard. And so instead they sent to the meeting Kevin Chan, who's their global policy director. He's Canada-based, though. He was Michael Ignatieff's head of policy back when Ignatieff was Liberal leader, as well as Rachel Curran, who's Facebook's head of public policy in Canada, who was Stephen Harper's head of policy. And you know, the meeting was pretty heated, but one highlight came at the very end of their testimony. And as Jason Kint, who heads up a trade association of online news publishers in the States, pointed out, you could actually get a little bit more of this from the audio-only feed than you could from the video feed of the meeting. So I just want to play this. An awkward accidental exchange at the very end between Kevin Chan from Meta, Facebook, and the committee's chair, Liberal MP Hedy Fry.
So that we can go into the 15 minutes of business. Thank you very much, Mr. Chan and Ms. Curran.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So reprehensible.
I'm sorry. Did you say something, Mr. Chan?
I was speaking to Ms. Curran.
I beg your pardon?
I was speaking to Ms. Curran.
I see, but your mic was on, so we all heard your comment.
I'll see.
I just thought you should recognize that.
I apologize,
it was quite inappropriate. Thank you. So let's have the suspension so we go into...
I think that's just a wonderful, little, delightfully awkward, cringeworthy piece of audio that just perfect sort of thing to play on a podcast. That's all.
Duly noted.
That shortcuts for this week. Thanks for joining me, Luke.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Yay. We are on Twitter at CanadaLand, and I, too, still am still kind of on Twitter at Goldsby. And I also co-host our monthly Wag the Dog podcast about Ontario's government. Where can people find you, Luke?
You know, normally I would direct people to my Twitter account, but, you know, I'm not a big fan of Twitter anymore. And frankly, I've got enough Twitter followers as is. You know, the idea of infinite growth, I just reject it as a concept. So, you know what? Look me up on Mastodon. I don't even remember what my Mastodon handle is. At L LeBrun, I think, actually. Who knows? Maybe it's that.
Yeah, search for L-E-B-R-U-N on there, and you know, odds are pretty good you'll find it. There aren't too many people on Mastodon. I'm there. You can look for my last name there. This episode is produced by Katie Lohr, with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our managing editor is Net Edgefo. The music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Thank you for supporting Canada Land.